Go to Otago, where a couple of cold-blooded critters are exciting zoologists. Two Tuatara hatchlings have recently been sighted at the Orokonui Eco Sanctuary outside Dunedin. They're the first to be seen since adult Tuatara were released there 8 years ago. Other than that, it's thought Tuatara haven't thrived in this part of the world for 800 years. Our guest is Professor Alison Cree from Otago University's Department of Zoology. Alison's led the research group into Tuatara population for over 7 years, so she's been waiting the whole damn time. Alison, welcome. Lovely to talk to you.
As Marie, good morning.
So can you describe how this discovery of these hatchlings happened?
We'd known for some time that nesting was happening in this particular area within the eco sanctuary, and we were regularly seeing adult males and adult females in good condition, suggesting they could be reproducing. And we'd also from time to time seen eggshells suggestive that hatching had been occurring. But this was the first time we'd actually found the hatchlings themselves. And we did it by putting some roofing material, just a very small strip of a material called ondulyne. It's like corrugated iron in shape, so it forms a little tunnel if you cut a strip of it. And we put strips of this material close to where we suspected there was a nest, and we hoped that one of the hatchlings might pass through and just happen to be there when we came out to check. And that's how it worked out. But we got lucky. There were actually two hatchlings under two of the covers found over the summer months. So that was very exciting. The discovery was made by Jade Christiansen, who's an undergraduate student here at Otago. She was working for our group over the summer on a Māori Pacifica summer studentship. And she was following up on an area where another student, Jemima Gardner-Rodden, who completed a Master of Science at the University of Otago, had been aware that there was nesting occurring in that area. So it was the combination of lots of observations and informed judgment about where we might find the hatchlings, and they cooperated.
What do you do when you find something like this? You must want to let out a whoop, probably get a photo. Like, what did she do?
Well, I wish I'd been there to see, but Jade was on her own, and she phoned me, and I could hear the excitement in her voice, and I was totally excited for her as well. And she was quite nervous because they're quite small, fragile little animals. You do have to be careful with them. They're very precious animals. And if you're not careful, you might cause them to drop their tails or stress them with too much heat in your hands, for example. You have to keep them out of the sun. And but Jade was doing everything correctly, and she was able to get a photograph and send it to me, and I was able to say, yes, you're absolutely right. That's a hatchling. That's what we've been waiting for. Well done. And from there, we went on and in later weeks found a second one as well. So that was very, very exciting.
Oh, so they were found separately. So she didn't touch them. You just leave them alone. It was just a question of observing and brilliantly getting a pick, yeah?
Well, when you turn the ondulyne cover, the animal, the Tuatara hatchlings, they're actually quite active, especially if it's a warm day. They're very frisky and they'll often run. And so you do have to handle them to be able to capture them and put them back under the cover where they'll be safe. And so that was done. And during
that process. Exciting. How exciting for her. And how big, do we know how old and also how big it was?
Well, probably no more than a few weeks old. And in size, about 4 to 5 centimetres long for the body length and about that much again for the tail. So they weigh probably about 4 or 5 grams.
How many pairs, and do they mate in pairs, or is it just a free-for-all? What's been the breeding program happening?
Males are quite competitive for mating opportunities and will mate with more females, as many females as they can get access to within their area, their territorial area. So the males will definitely fight with each other for those opportunities. The females may mate with more than one male, but the males are probably doing a lot of the control of which males the females get access to in their area. So there could be a mixture of male parentage within a clutch of eggs. That's possible, but we don't know for these particular ones.
And what happens then? Is there a period of sitting on the egg, nesting? What's the reproduction process in the rearing?
Has mated, which happens in late summer, she will then have sperm inside her body that can be used to fertilise the eggs that she has produced. And at that stage, they get fertilised after they come out of the ovaries, they move into the oviducts, get fertilised, and then she goes through a process of shelling the eggs. And that process takes the winter, about 7 months, and then she'll dig a nest in spring. And the nest is made away from the regular burrow. The female will dig a shallow hole into the ground. It could be about 10 centimetres long, but it could be quite a bit longer. And she will, over the course of several weeks, eventually decide on which hole she's going to put the eggs into. And then she lays them at night, and then she covers the tunnel entrance in with soil and grass. And she may, in fact, come back to it at night for a week or even longer to protect that site from other females, which are known to be problematic in terms of interfering with where other females have dug, and even we call them nest vandals. They can kick out the eggs that have been laid by other females. So we think they're guarding the nests during that time. But then once that period, that short period of guarding has finished, the female, as far as we know, then abandons all her interest in that site, and the eggs then go through a period, a very long period of incubation in the ground, over a year.
Over a year, goodness. Is it a little bit like we see the turtles, you know, where they bury them in the beach and then eventually they pop up and make a run for it? Is it a similar kind of incubation for these little tuatara?
Well, it's longer than in sea turtles. It's typically a year, perhaps even 18 months in the best studied population, which is on Takaporewa in Cook Strait. And it... So this is probably a response to the cool climate that we have in New Zealand. It is a relatively cool place by reptilian standards for all our reptile species. And we see some parallels with our live-bearing lizards too, and having really long pregnancies for embryonic development.
Sorry to be prurient, but mating with tuatara, mating with reptiles, is it more similar to birds or is it similar to mammals? Can I put it that politely? Do they get it on?
Well, certainly the males and females have to come into close contact, and that means they have to bring the part of the body that we call the cloaca between the hind legs together. And interestingly, tuatara do not have the structures that we call hemipenes in lizards, which are like having two penises, and we think that they just have to bring the cloacas together, which is a bit more like birds, if you
birds.
Like.
Mm.
But certainly the sperm has to be brought in the male's body in contact with the female's body to get inside the female's body and then achieve fertilisation.
What happens to these little tuatara when they... How do they feed, for example? There's no... I'm going to need some re-education, I'm sorry, on reptiles and their processes.
As I mentioned, the hatchlings are actually very active when they're warm, and much more active than you might appreciate if you've only ever seen adult tuatara, especially if you've only seen them in a captive setting. So they will be moving around potentially. They may be basking during the daytime, so coming out to the sun, but staying very close to shelter. And they'll probably also be a little bit active at night at times when it's warm. But they'll be very wary because one of the threats for them is adult tuatara, which are known to be cannibals when they get the opportunity. And other threats include getting too warm or dehydrated in hot and dry conditions. So they'll be extremely cryptic in their behaviour and tend to stay undercover. And we might not see them again for perhaps 5 or 10 years until they get close to maturity and start to become more confident, I suppose, of coming out at night and holding their ground when people approach and being able to be seen again at that point in time.
What is their history? They're an ancient species, aren't they? They're certainly related to ancient species, Alice.
Well, they have an ancient ancestry. We know that animals from the same group, which we call Rhynchocephalians, were quite widespread around the world about 250 to 200 million years ago. And the lineage that survived in New Zealand and that led to our modern Tuatara is the only one that survives today. So here in New Zealand, it's the only place where we find Rhynchocephalians, Tuatara, the only known species, and their closest relatives are the lizards.
And their history in New Zealand and different parts of the country, of course, those of us lucky enough to be near places like Zealandia can sometimes spot them there, in an eco-sanctuary. But what's their prevalence or otherwise in the wild or even in sanctuaries in New Zealand?
Well, if you can picture back sort of 750 or so years ago when the first people came to New Zealand, the South Island would have been a mixture of forest and some shrublands and grasslands, and Tuatara would have been just about everywhere along the eastern coast. And we know this from the fossils that have been found from Marlborough through Canterbury, Otago and into Southland. And the jaw bones of Tuatara are very distinctive. The teeth form a little edge that's like the serrations of a steak knife, and they can't be mistaken for anything else. So we're confident that Tuatara were surviving in the South Island as well as the North Island when people first arrived in the late 1200s. And they died out rapidly with the effects of humans, including the effects of rats that would have come with humans and would have preyed on the Tuatara. And so we lost them from all of the South Island and all of the North Island, and they survive today naturally only on about 32 islands that are either in Cook Strait or further north off the northeastern coast. And it's from one of the most significant populations in Cook Strait, Takapō Rewa, also known as Stephen's Island, that the Tuatara at Orokanui were sourced. And we were able to bring them south from Cook Strait with the support of Ngāti Kauata, who are the kaitiaki of Tuatara from that area, and with the support of local people here in the Orokanui area, Kati Hui Rapa, Runaka Ki Pukataraki, are the local guardians for the eco-sanctuary. And with their support and the involvement of many other organisations and people, we were able to bring them into this secure eco-sanctuary that is so important in helping us re-establish animals like Tuatara in part of their former homeland. And that's only possible with the hard work of people like Elton Smith and his team here at Orokanui, who keep the fence intact to keep out predatory mammals. And the eco-sanctuary is currently closed here at the moment with the COVID situation, but that biodiversity, that predator protection work is ongoing with as essential work. And as soon as we are given the go-ahead to be able to visit the sanctuary again, we hope that we'll see many visitors back to help support the ongoing work of these very special places.
It is such a beautiful part of Otago as well. And just remind us a little of it. So how far is it from Dunedin?
It's about a 20-minute drive, and it's above the village of Waitati. I hope I can say village without offending anyone.
It's a people's republic, I think.
It's very close to the coast, but it's in a valley, so it looks out to the west. And in the afternoon, it gets very good sun exposure. But it's cloud forest at the top, so it has a good elevational range from near sea level up to, I think, 200 or 300 metres. And that means there's a range of habitats within the eco-sanctuary. And it's an ongoing work to try to restore the vegetation closer to what it would have been before humans modified it so greatly. But there's been some great work done by a huge team of volunteers and staff and others to make that possible.
How long has the eco-sanctuary been in place? I know we've spoken previously to those who've been part of its development, but how long does it take to get to this point, you know, and how many layers of work?
It's a massive achievement. It certainly can't be underrated. The commitment and the vision of early people who had the idea and chose the site and then recruited the support of the local community from all sectors, including sponsors, including the business community and local government and so on, and Department of Conservation to get support to have this vision of restoring what, as much as we could, what would have been in the past. And that's been happening since, I think, the early 2000s. And I think it was about 2008 when the fence was closed and 2012 when tuatara were released. And there's been a number of other significant species released as well into what we think was part of their former area, including a number of bird species and some lizards.
How many are you hoping for? You found two hatchlings, you've got proof of two hatchlings. I'm not sure how many tuatara were originally brought to the eco sanctuary, but what sort of population are you hoping for over time? What's realistic? And also, how long do they live?
Okay, the number that were originally brought was about 30 adults and about 57 half-grown juveniles. And since then, a further group of juveniles, half-grown juveniles from captivity has been released. So we think there could be about 100 tuatara, not counting these hatchlings, but probably the number of breeding adults is less than half that probably at the moment.
How long they live?
The area is large enough that the population could grow into the low thousands, all going well, as long as we maintain that that area free of introduced mammals that would be so problematic. And then the question about how long do they live? Through research that Nicola Nelson at Victoria University of Wellington and others have been doing, it's likely they live into their to the low hundreds. So certainly there are animals that we're confident of aging in the wild that are in their 90s, if not in their early first century of life in the wild. And that's an ongoing piece of work to continue to follow those in the wild.
How exciting. Lovely to talk. I bet you are just busting to get back to situation normal with all the investment that's gone on to these creatures, but they know what they're doing too, I guess, don't they, to a certain extent. It'll be the pest control, I know, that's top of mind. But Alison, thanks very much for being with us. Professor Alison Cree from Otago University's Department of Zoology.